It's his world. You just live in it. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Politics, 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 politics.
That's right. It's politics, politics, politics. Welcome and good morning. I'm your host, Warren Markowitz, and this is Politically Incorrect on a Warren Markowitz Show, live on Spreaker.com. Welcome to 22 December 2017, one of the last shows for the year, and of course, 3 days before the big holiday of Christmas. So anybody of my friends out there celebrating Christmas, from this Jewish kid to all of you guys, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays. Hope you and your family enjoy your time, and thank you for taking the time to join me today. We got some pretty interesting things on tap for today. We got the Bundy trial. I'll give you an update on that. We're talking about privilege. You'll be surprised where we're going with that one. And taxes, a little illegal immigration, and a few things that just kind of popped up over the last couple of days. I do apologize for not producing a show over the last, 2 weeks. But I'm pleased to say that my practice has been taking off, and I've been in places that really require description. Some pretty historical, some pretty confusing, and some pretty downright depressing. But overall, it's been a good couple of weeks, and I'm glad everybody's back with me, and I'm glad we're all joining together. So before we get off on our tangent, let's take care of a little bit of housekeeping. Remember to follow us on, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, YouTube. We got us on iTunes, got some podcasts on SoundCloud, we're still on Blog Talk, and we're still on Podomatic, and of course here at Spreaker.com, and pretty much anywhere else you can find us on the web. We are being shared constantly, and I do appreciate everybody for doing that. The more we get our voice out, the more we get to be heard, and the more logic tends to be able to, well, it's the best parts of the First Amendment, you know? The First Amendment says, it's the marketplace of ideas, and that's exactly what we're trying to do here. Share our ideas, share our thoughts, and get us out in front of the general public. So, while I try to finish my cup of coffee, it's time for the commercial break, but I'll be back in about 3 minutes. Sit tight, hang on, and thank you for joining me today.
The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-0514 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-0514 to take your call now. Call 1-800-516-0514. That's 1-800-516-0514. Again, 1-800-516-0514.
The Warren Markowitz Show. It's his world. You just live in it.
That's right. It's my world, and welcome back to it. Okay. Where do we start? Okay, let's start with the simplest of things. 2 years in the making. We've gone through three, maybe four trials. Guy spending almost 700 days in jail. And the federal government has still managed to completely screw up the case to the point where I don't think anybody even wants to see or hear about this ever again. I mean, everybody knows my position. Everybody that I've spoken to knows my position. I've met with Clive and Bundy. I've met with a bunch of the people who are involved with the quote-unquote standoff. I know people that have reported on this and discussed this and have participated, you know, by observing the trials. And the bottom line happens to be we're not getting the complete story from anybody, least alone the federal government. And the federal government has managed to get themselves, well, they got their balls caught in a vice. Let's be blunt. The judge this week on December 20th dismissed on the grounds of a mistrial, granted a mistrial, therefore dismissing the trial as it is now, and set briefing hearings over the next several weeks to find out whether or not the trial will continue and be brought back to life. Well, here's the thing. This was a trial involving Cliven. This was supposed to be, at the very beginning, what they did was they broke up the parties into three different groups, the least culpable, the most culpable, and some people somewhere in the middle. And then a bunch of guys in the front end go, two guys got convicted, a couple of guys pled out. But the convictions were stupid stuff. It was obstruction of justice. It was interstate travel. It was not, for the most part, non-violent related issues. And then, of course, now you got the mistrial. Yeah, because the first one ended with a hung jury on many of the charges on many of the people, they retried them again. And now, of course, now we've got this trial that started in October, which was just set aside by the granting of a mistrial on an application by the defense because of things that they claimed were not delivered by the federal government, by the prosecutor's office. Well, lo and behold, they were right. The government was playing fast and loose. They were playing, nah, you don't need this. Nah, you don't want that. Nah, we don't have to give that to you. But here's the thing. I would assume, and maybe it's just simply because I absolutely believe in a judicial system that actually works. And of course, this is like anything else. When you have a system that is supposed to work, the people participating in the system are supposed to believe that it works too. You know, it's the way things go. If you intend to have something work, then you have to intend to have the people who are participating in it holding themselves to the highest standards possible, especially when it comes to fairness. You know, because there is a difference between justice and law. The law may say something, and justice may deliver something else. For example, and this is just a side note, just to give you an understanding, there, many, many years ago, there was an issue involving an individual who beat a pregnant wife or girlfriend to the point where the fetus was born. And I'll say it's a fetus, but it was born dead. Okay, it aborted. They tried to try the guy on murder charges, but the statute didn't qualify the fetus as a person for the purposes of the murder statute, which means some scumbag walked away from beating his wife or girlfriend nearly to death in order to terminate a pregnancy and walked away from the attempt, you know, the murder of the fetus or the murder of the unborn child. That's law and justice. The law said one thing and justice couldn't deliver what everybody expected. Well, let's slide forward and let's talk about what's going on with the Bundys. Here's a guy who had a legitimate dispute or has a legitimate dispute with the Bureau of Land Management and the federal government over grazing fees, which, by the way, didn't turn out to be $1 million, except if you want to add all the fees and costs and collections and all the other fun stuff that, you know, every other government agency likes to tack on to something you owe them. It works out to less than $10,000, about $8,800 or something like that. So just as bureaucratic people go about things, they decide to spend $1.5 million to collect what they claim to be less than $1 million worth of fees. And then it all goes sideways and blows up in their face because who knows how much money they've spent in these trials incarcerating these people for 600 I think it was almost 660 days before most of them were let out, based upon another assumption that the federal government put forth to the court and convinced the court that they were doing, that they were a threat to the general public. So when we're talking about fairness in government, when we're talking about fairness in the judicial system, when we're talking about trusting other people, we have to recognize one thing. It starts with trusting ourselves. If we're not willing to tell the truth just to get that little bitty edge, how are we supposed to expect others to hold themselves up to standards that would apply? Think about it this way. This is not a predicate to the gun control argument, but if one side of the country says, well, guns are evil, guns are bad, guns kill people, only the government should have guns, well, isn't the government filled with people? Isn't the government made up of individuals, of persons? Are we not trusting other people to handle them properly? I mean, I would say, and this is how I would personally play it, is that if the government can have something, so should I. Now, I'm not asking for a nuclear weapon, and I'm not asking for a howitzer, and I'm not asking to drive a tank down Main Street. First of all, you probably couldn't be able to park the damn thing. It makes sense that I'm not asking for something that is uncommon, that whether it be a rifle or a pistol or even a shotgun. I have those things. I have a right to have those things, and therefore, I'm on an equal footing. And anybody tells you that a ragtag group of people can't, you know, take on the U.S. government because of all the toys and whistles and bells that they have, hasn't really been paying attention for the last 40-plus years. Because we got our asses handed to us politically in Vietnam, even though they lost over 1 million people, and we lost, I think 58,000 died, and plus hundreds of thousands more were wounded. But it was a ragtag group of people. And how about the 16 years we've spent in Afghanistan and in Iraq? We weren't defeating armies, we were defeating individuals. I mean, the Founding Fathers made a lot of sense when they said a militia. The individual, the core of America is the individual. And this goes back to everything. The core of all of our processes, the core of our judicial system, the core of our courts goes back to the individual. Is the individual willing to hold themselves to a higher standard? And what was proven in the last couple of days in the Bundy trial and the mistrial that was just recently granted was that no, there are some people in government that can't be trusted, that will not hold themselves to a higher standard, that are looking to pin things on their chest, victories on their chest at any cost, even at the cost of compromising their own values or compromising the values that we all hold dear. These people don't belong. We expect more. Just like we recognize the fact that there are good cops and there are bad cops. The good cops hold themselves to a standard, a higher standard. They have an obligation to us. Why? Because we expect that from them. Bad cops are just, you know, out for themselves. And it's not just a bad cop, bad FBI guy, bad school crossing guard, bad teacher, or whatever it may be. Employees in the governmental system are just, they're flawed human beings like you or I. But we have to work to something better. So, while I'm happy to say Merry Christmas and hopefully a happy and a healthy new year, I can't say to anybody who was involved in those processes. And for 2 years, by the way, the general news didn't cover it in any depth. This was this giant standoff between the Bundys and their militia against the federal government, and everybody was scared to death that something was going to happen, and nobody really watched the videos. Nobody really listened to what was being said. Cliven's a crazy little coot. The man is a strong-headed individual with a big family, and he raised his kids to respect themselves and respect others, and I know that because I've met most of them. And he's as stubborn as a day is long. But in my opinion, he didn't do a third of what they've accused him of. And all he wanted was a fair day in court. Looks like they finally got one. So, here's how we're going to play this. We, in a new year, are going to wish amongst ourselves and to those we deal with that we will hold ourselves to a higher standard, that we will strive to be better. Hey, it's Christmas. It was just Hanukkah. New Year's is just in front of us. It's a time to wipe the slate clean and start things over again. That's how I want to see this. Okay, because, you know, there's a lot of other goofy shit going on, too. You know, white privilege and taxes and DACA and all that fun stuff. Oh, and the constant drumbeating of impeachment that we keep hearing. So, while we park away the Bundy matter and we say, thank goodness it's over at least for now, there are still some guys that are fighting to get their freedom back and to deal with the problems and the prior trials, and maybe the one that we haven't heard of yet. The one that was supposed to be taking place back in forward in June after this one. We still don't know what's going to happen with those guys. It's a bit of a mess. So, we take a deep breath. We play a little of this. Hold on.
The Warren Markowitz Show.
The Warren Markowitz Show.
On Spreaker, Automatic, and Red State Radio.
And we come back live again. Okay. next thing up on the board is, well, let's talk about taxes and DACA. They're kind of intertwined with each other. There was a Supreme Court decision just recently that basically struck down the demand to produce all of the internal communications and paperwork and all the fun stuff from the California courts that were, when the federal government was sued about DACA. Let's get something straight. When you have a program that is illegally constructed, when you have a program that is illegally and improperly advocated, when you have people who are dependent upon that illegal program, we are kind of in a stuck place. A prime example is this. Whenever a government program is created or developed, we find ourselves stuck in a position in which we have people who take advantage of it, people who participate in it, people who are part of the program because we put that program out. Well, what about the simple situation in which we have a circumstance in which the people that are participating in that program are doing so in a circumstance which puts them in a bad position? And that, hang on a second, my dog is losing her mind. Hold on. So here's the thing. We've got 800,000 plus DACA people. Those are people that applied for permits under the program developed by Obama.
The Warren Markowitz Show.
The Warren Markowitz Show.
On Spreaker, Automatic, and Red State Radio.
Okay, I guess we're going to have to edit that junk out later on. But here's the circumstance. 800,000 people apply for DACA. DACA is a program that does not exist legally. It sits in a gray area. In other words, the president said he could do that, and then he realized when he first did it that he couldn't do it. So what do we do with 800,000 people who've signed up? Well, real simple. We have a conundrum. They were not allowed to be here in the first place. Now they're here. Now they're still staying here because some odd program put them here. In March, that program disappears. What happens to those people? Reality says, and this is just the law. Then we're going to talk about law and justice. Reality says those people need to be deported, sent back to the country of origin. Said, thank you very much. There's the door. Out you go. Is that fair? Is it right? Is it compatible with the American judicial system? And does it address the issues that are truly part of the problem? Now, many of those people are likely to have American citizen relatives. People born here, people that came here legally, people that, well, any of the fun stuff that goes around with it. But how do you deal with that? I guess the first question you have to deal with is this. How do you deal with the 800,000 people plus their 4.3 million illegal relatives behind them that are still here? Those are the numbers. The DAPA program, which is the Deferred Action for Parental Arrivals, and the DACA program totaled up over 5 million people. Now, this concept of chain migration is the biggest problem. And the only reason it's a big problem is because each person who is an American citizen, anybody who's granted citizenship, has a right to sponsor other persons to come into the country. If you sponsor over your lifetime 10 people over your lifetime as an American citizen, that 5 million becomes 50 million based on current numbers. At 335 or 350 million people in the United States, that means we're now close to 400 million. If everything stays the same, we're close to 400 million people, and 50 million of them are foreigners. 50 million people who also, again, once they get the citizenship, have a right to bring in 10 people. That's called chain migration. That's why I say this is not just about the 800,000. This is about the roughly 20 million people behind that 800,000 that could come here if citizenship was granted. Now, of course, you can eliminate that problem by eliminating the concept of chain migration. You could eliminate the problem by providing permanent status, but no rights as a citizen, no rights to sponsor. You could eliminate that issue by stripping welfare and governmental subsidies from every one of those persons. It may sound like punishment, but it's fair. If the concept of sending them back is so foreign, then you eliminate the issues that keep them here. No right to vote. You're not an American. You don't grant them citizenship. You don't grant them the right. They're not granted the right to vote. They're not granted the right to own a firearm. They are not granted a right to sponsor persons into this country. Okay? There has to be a punishment for breaking the law. Otherwise, there is no law. And the only reason why the Democrats, and particularly the Democrats, want to support so many people coming into this country is for votes. These individuals tend to be ones that are dependent upon government. They look at where they're coming from. They're coming from 58% of them. Come from south of the border. Now, that doesn't mean that the other 42% that come from other parts of the world aren't in the same circumstances, and this isn't an issue of whether they're brown, red, white, or yellow. This is a factual issue. If 58%, if 6 out of 10 come from the Latin American area, those countries tend to be more heavily federalist. In other words, the government is more involved in the day-to-day lives of the individuals. More of a welfare state. More of a socialist influence in society. And this is not cool, because look at what's going on in Venezuela. Venezuela, at one point, was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. It had oil reserves bigger than Saudi Arabia. It had a wealthy middle class. It had an educated population. And I say had because the wealthy middle class, for the most part, has picked up and gotten out. And if they haven't then, they're doing it now. The educated population is leaving in droves, and what you have is a poor underclass that is being supported by a failed government, that is being supported by a military. Venezuela is headed for a military coup, whether you like it or not, because you cannot continue to have such shortages on goods and services and a currency that has lost, well, if you complain that over the last 100 years, the U.S. dollar has been depreciated to almost a penny of its worth, try doing that by 10 times. The Bolivar is worth almost zero. It is about a thousandth of what it was when it started this mess. And all they did was decide to take from the top and give to the bottom. That's what they did. You know, we in this country argue about the top 1%. Well, the only people who argue about the top 1% are the people who want to take the money from the top 1% and give it to the bottom 98%. The middle class, we get screwed anyway. We work hard, we pay our taxes, we go to school, we educate our kids, we create, you know, we work in the environments and we work in the society to develop the country, but we get screwed. We get fucked six ways to Sunday because we're the ones who keep the engine moving. The ones at the bottom, they don't have, they barely pay taxes if they pay at all. We pay what we feel to be a substantial amount of our money to the government for taxes, and the top 1% pays theirs. But let me explain something to you. It might be the top 1%. It might be the top 5%. It could be the top 10% for all I care, even the top 20%. But when you talk about who's funding the government, you have to go where the money is. You can't tax the bottom. The bottom's got nothing to tax. The difference between a person who makes $1 million a year and a person who makes $10,000 a year is substantial. For those of you who still don't know how to use percentages and numbers, I'm going to leave that up to you. For the rest of you, find a calculator if you're that dumb. But if you're taxing everybody at 15%, as a flat tax is something I approve of and think that's fair because everybody's got an axe to grind and everybody's got a dog in a fight. A person that makes $10,000 a year pays $1,500 in taxes. A person who makes $100,000 a year pays $15,000 in taxes. A person who makes $1 million a year pays $150,000 in taxes. What's the difference? It's just where you put the zero. But everybody's got something to say. Everybody has an interest. One of my biggest problems with taxes is that the people who don't have to abide by them, the people who don't pay them, the people who want to, who complain that we're giving tax breaks to the wealthy, well, where is the money coming from to fund the government? As much as we love to spend money on the government, and as much as the government loves to spend our money, where's the money come from? We just did the numbers in front. It comes from the top, not the bottom. It also comes from the middle. Now, if you want to give me tax write-offs, such as my child care, excuse me, or other things, that's great. Excuse me. But don't expect me to complain or worry about you reducing spending on programs, because that's my money you're saving. That's not somebody who works less or has less money. That's my money you're saving. And when you're saving my money, I'm happy about that because that means I've got more in my pocket. I can do more for my family when I have to pay you less. And I don't have to be subject to late fees and penalties and realize that no matter how much money I pay the IRS, I wind up owing the same amount of money I did last year. The Democrats, or the left in general, think that if you've got it, it belongs to them. It doesn't. Never has. Should never will. Venezuela is the most recent example of an utterly failed system of socialism that it behooves me that there are so many people in this country, especially in the groups of millennials, that think communism and socialism is a great way of doing things. Stop working. Stop producing. Stop creating the wealth, and you watch how fast things collapse. Because the takers will just simply keep taking. When there's no more givers left, the world comes to a screeching halt. You know, it's 26 years since the collapse of the Soviet Union. 26 years since 1991, when the Soviet Union ceased to exist, and the Commonwealth of Independent States and the Russian Federation came back to the globe. But in those 26 years, those countries in Central and Eastern Europe, They've continued to struggle and develop their economies and develop their societies and to build themselves up. Now, are they world players? No. Are they equals in their neighborhood? They're getting really close. But they're doing it not because they're taking from the top and giving it to everybody else, because just giving things away does not make one's life better. I would prefer you to leave me the hell alone. I would prefer that you did not continue to feed me. And this goes on to talk about the idea of a basic income. You know, you have a lot of people talking about, well, now we need a basic income. You know what a basic income is? It's welfare. Basic income means you get to live off the tit of the government. I mean, somebody else is going out and working for you. You get to sit on your ass at home and collect a check. Not my idea of fun. And guess what? Doesn't lead to productivity. Doesn't lead to development of new ideas. Doesn't lead to expansion of thought. It doesn't give you anything. It's a waste of money. You want to see people get off their ass and go back to work? Cut off the unemployment insurance. Yeah, we had people on unemployment insurance for 2 years during the Obama administration. And when they started to go back to work is when that money started drying up. When the benefits stopped coming, they figured, oh, maybe I should do something. And then they complained they were terminally unemployed because they were out of the workplace for too long. Too bad. So sad. That's the way the world works. So, here we are. Time for another break. Taxes, I think we're in good shape. We'll see come February how things work out. We'll see whether or not the economy grows. And for those of my cousins and my family and my friends that have all said that, you know, the example that AT&T gave $1,000 to 2,000 employees, whoop-de-doo, they made billions of dollars. Again, I say, who are you to say how much somebody has to pay somebody else? Is it your money? No. It doesn't belong to you. It doesn't belong to you. Don't tell me how to spend it. The bottom line, my friends, and I just heard this from a 16-year-old, is self-reliance. That's where it comes in. Create the environment in which we rely upon ourselves. And the only way that happens is when government gets the hell out of our way. Be back right after this. I need to take a breather. Be good.
Freedom comes with a price. Responsibility. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-711-3017 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-711-3017. Again, that's 800-711-3017.
It's his world. You just live in it. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
And we are back. Thank you again for joining us today. We are talking about a whole bunch of stuff. Let's move on to my next one. This is going to be fun. White privilege has been the topic of conversation for a considerable period of time over the last several, well, actually years. But this year in particular, because we no longer have a black president, now it becomes white privilege becomes the thing. You know, you're privileged because you have a family. You're privileged because you went to a different type of school. You're privileged because you got to play sports, or you got to play a musical instrument, or you had an art teacher, or any of those other fun things. But it's only because you were white that you had those things. Not because your parents worked for it, or not because your school system was able to afford it because your parents paid the taxes into it, but because you were white. And now you're supposed to feel bad about it. You know, this goes back to the safe spaces that we talked about, and the idea that we can segregate the school system again because it's unfair that, you know, people of color should be subject to the privilege that whites have. The last time I checked, and I mean last time I checked, there was, it was illegal to separate things out. It was illegal to break people up based upon their color. It was illegal to segregate schools. It's a circumstance. It really is a circumstance. So, here's what I'm saying. I think the truly people that are privileged, and I'm not a white supremacist. I'm far from it. See, I'm Jewish, so that means people who are white supremacists, those neo-Nazis, those really bad guys, those that utter misquote, think I'm just as dark as the next guy in the corner. But I think the people of privilege are the ones that have the advantages given to them by the system. And the system happens to literally set up people for failure. I mean, let that sink in for a second. The system is designed to create failure, create dependence, create circumstances in which you are expecting somebody else to step in and help. You know, affirmative action was the big thing. Yeah, it couldn't deny a qualified individual the right of employment based upon their skin color. And if you did that, then you broke a law and you could be sued. But we never addressed the circumstance of when you've got a situation in which the opposite occurs. We called it reverse discrimination in the 80s and 90s. Because we were growing up in a situation, in a circumstance in which we didn't expect the people that we were hanging with to need affirmative action to get a job, to need affirmative action to get into college. Now, I don't know where you went to college or where you went to school or what circumstances you grew up in, but most of the people I worked with, I respected. And because I respected them, I expected of them the same as I expected of myself, which is that I want to be able to advance myself at my own pace. So here's the thing, and you need to think about this hard. Are we in a circumstance in which the roles have now become reversed, where we're being judged by the color of our skin? That we are being, our actions are being determined by the circumstances of our birth. That's how absurd it is. That in and of itself is how absurd it is. It's because we are, how do I put it? One was born white, one was born black, one was born Asian, one was born Indian. Now, there are stereotypes in this world, and sometimes there are stereotypes for reasons, because people get stuck in circumstances, right? I mean, think about it. Think Italian, you think mobster. You think Irish, you think drunk. You think Jew, you think cheap. You think black, you think lazy. Think Indian, you think, bad customer service. Chinese or Asian, you think good at math. Okay, all these stupid shit. But here is the part that becomes the problem. The part that becomes a problem is when that becomes entrenched in society. Yes, that's correct. People feel entitled. I've got one of our listeners popped up on a chat room, so forgive me if I kind of get a little distracted. But America's problem is that people feel entitled. The only entitlement you actually have is to wear that badge that you're an American. Now, go do something with it. My father used to tell me that there are stupid, smart people all over this world. And that's kind of true. People expect to be treated a certain way because they have a certain air about them or a certain circumstance. Go out and prove it. Go out and earn it. You see, I think the people who are truly privileged are the ones that are screaming it the most. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't feel privileged because I'm white. I work for a living. As a matter of fact, I have worked for myself for almost 20 years. I have struggled. I have worked hard to pay my bills. I've worked hard to buy my cars. I've worked hard to pay my mortgage. I have done what I had to do to take care of myself and my family. I didn't get any support from my government. I don't get anything. I don't wait for a check every month. You know, it's hysterical. I like to shop in places like Walmart and Winco. If you've never shopped at a Winco, I got to tell you something right now. It's a good supermarket. Okay? It's like a Smith's or a Walbaum's or a Pathmark or a Grand Union or whatnot. And it's employee-owned. And it's got really good prices. And a really decent selection of products and services. But the one time I cannot stand going into Walmart or Winco or any of those discount chain supermarkets is the first week of the month. It's a freaking disaster. Now, you can tell who is waiting for that week to come shopping because their carts are overflowing. But the ones that work for a living shop on a weekly basis. And it becomes apparent. It really does. Because the privileged are the ones who have things given to them. Okay, Snarkhead, I get it. Thank you very much. I don't buy their meats anyway. I actually like to buy my meats at Costco. Just as a side note, Snarkhead of Oz has been popping in. And see, obviously, she knows about a Winco in SAC. I don't know what that is, 916 SAC. But anyway, thank you very much for participating. Here it is. I don't want to be judged by anything other than me. You know, one of the most powerful speeches that we have had the pleasure of hearing and seeing and historical record of is King's speech in Washington. The content of one's character. I have gone back to this. I have raised this issue a dozen times in previous broadcasts. And here's the issue. You are what you do. Sacramento. Thank you. You are what you do. If you are a generous person and you work towards benefiting other people, I got news for you. I firmly believe that karma is a bitch. It will come back. It will support you. There are a couple of people out here who have been following the Bundy trial, John Lamb and Kelly Stewart, two in particular. They have done it at their own expense. They have done it at the support of other people, but they have spent their time, effort, money, and family time to report on something that impacted us nationally that the mainstream media kind of ignored. And then some people went ahead trolling them, calling them everything other than under the sun. But karma will take care of them. Fate will take care of them. They happen to be very religious people. So in their eyes, God will take care of them. And you want to know something? They deserve it. They did something of value. They contributed to society. See, this is the thing. When you've got people who want to split you up and say you can't participate here because you're not of this color or this race, what value is that? Where does that come from? See, black privilege exists. You want to know why it exists? Because we are allowing ourselves, again, to be compartmentalized and broken up. When I was growing up, all right, when I was growing up, we had to work towards equality. And we meant that sincerely because we came out of a generation before us that segregation was commonplace. Segregation, separation of people based upon the color of their skin was common. whether you were from the South or whether you're from the North, whether it was economics or whether it was simply social, that was acceptable. Black organizations, white organizations, Jewish organizations, Christian organizations, they were acceptable. So what did we do? We rebelled. We said, to hell with it. We started hanging out with everybody. We started going to school with everybody. We started dealing with everybody. It didn't make a difference to us. Then flash forward 40 years, and we are going backwards. Our kids are being brought up in environments in which the concept of limited access, safe spaces, segregation based upon the desires of people to be separate. You know, today, if you say that this is a safe space, only people of color can participate, most people don't even bat an eyelash. But in reality, if you really want that, go someplace else. You see, America was not built that way. Regardless of whether you want to argue that blacks were considered three-fifths of a person, no, slaves were considered three-fifths of a person. Free blacks were still counted as a person. But we're not going to even argue about that. America is a melting pot, but it's now becoming more of a mixing bowl. Because we're not allowing ourselves to kind of get together. I had dinner at a friend's house yesterday, and this is an example. He's Canadian. His wife is Mexican. Now, my experience with Mexican food was pretty much Taco Bell. Okay? Couldn't stand it. Can't stand it. Don't like the smell of it. Done. But yet, there's three or four decent, really good Mexican restaurants here in Vegas that I like to go to. And they are truly ethnic restaurants. And I mean that sincerely. These are real Mexican restaurants. And the reason why I bring it up is this. Ethnicity is where we melt. We are not a cultural melting pot. We are an ethnic melting pot. Doesn't make a difference where in the world you come from, who you are, or where you were born. If you come to America and want to subscribe to the concepts of the Constitution and the ideas that everybody who is here is special and has an opportunity to grow and contribute, then guess what? It works out. There is no privilege, okay? There's no privilege if you're black. There's no privilege if you're white. What do you got? What are you willing to give? You see, we went from a society of givers and a society of doers to a society of takers. What do you give and make? Okay, that was the one big thing I noticed moving from the East Coast to Vegas, to the West Coast, for all intents and purposes. You know, the perspective I got when I was in California all those many years ago, even to today, is what can you do for me today? What have you done for me recently? You know, it's all about now. Back in New York, is what have you done? What have you done? What can you do? We have to get back to that concept of where are we going? Are we going forward? Are we going backwards? Kennedy did the greatest thing. 1960, Kennedy turns around and says, we're going to the moon before the end of the decade. Right? Had no idea how he was getting there. No idea if he could pull it off. He set a goal and off he went. That's what we need again. I wouldn't be surprised if Trump stood up next year and in the State of the Union address and said, by the end of the decade, we're putting a man on Mars. Or at the end of the decade, we're building a station on the moon. We're expanding the International Space Station to be able to launch a larger ship further. Some outrageous goal. Not curing cancer. Not identifying, you know, other issues of global warming, climate change, weather. A goal we can wrap our heads around and stick our necks out and go, we're off. A new race to the stars. That's what we need. That's when your engineers and your scientists and your thinkers and your dreamers all come back together again. That's what we're missing today. Today we're missing, you can't talk about this because this person is transgender. When did we wind up with 87,000 different genders? I thought it was guys and girls. males and females. All right, everything else is kind of a offshoot, a mutation. I don't care if you want to, if two girls like to sleep together, two guys like to sleep together. I don't give a damn any of that. That to me is sex. Gender, somebody's got to start dealing with a little reality here because we're starting to take a sharp turn to the ridiculous. And that, again, is impacting. You can't say things because people get upset about it. Facts upset people. And if you're going to call me a racist because I don't particularly care about the idea of white privilege because I'm still waiting for my privilege card to come in the mail. Okay, and obviously because, you know, there must be some conspiracy that I didn't get it yet. Everybody else who's screaming about a privilege has probably already got one. Because if you noticed, when the liberals and the Democrats decided to vote against the tax bill, you know, all of a sudden the world was coming to an end and people were going to die and everything's going to collapse. And guess what? That didn't happen. It's not going to happen. We're not going to be stepping over people in the streets. We're not going to be shoveling the dead into carts as they walk by us. There isn't going to be a special garbage truck to bring out your dead. The end of the world scenarios are ridiculous. They're absurd. And to be perfectly honest with you, they're not part of the issue. Because all the Democrats wanted to do and all the liberals wanted to do was turn around and say to you, you're not smart enough to manage your own money. You're not responsible enough to use your own money. But that's it. It's all about the dollars when it comes to that. Because they buy votes. That, by the way, ties back into the DACA and the DAPA issue. It's buying votes. You know, if you really want to know the honest truth, if you deported 5 million people, which, by the way, just so that you know, I already did the numbers, would take about 20 years with the current immigration system that we have. Based upon the number of court hearings and the number of people they process every year, 20 years, at 250,000 per year. But here's the thing. Who does it help? Who benefits? You want to know who benefits? I figured it out. The people who benefit are the people who deserve to benefit. And those are your uneducated workers, predominantly your young blacks, predominantly your displaced Asians, the ones that are part of society, the Latinos, the blacks, the immigrant families that have come here legally looking to build a better life, the ones that are stuck in the inner cities but can't find a job because somebody else is undercutting their payroll, because they're hiring illegals or they're paying less, because it's basic economics. When you have less, you can't force the bottom up by increasing the cost of the employer. You have to let it happen, what do they call it? Not ergonomically, not holistically. It has to happen naturally. And the only way it happens naturally is if the bottom end starts to diminish. It disappears. The labor force shrinks. When the labor force shrinks, the cost of that labor naturally goes up. And that happens all the way across the board. That's why you have fewer people up at the very top who could run major international corporations, and they get paid as ridiculously as they do because they're there. They got the skills. And it slides down towards your middle management and your people in the center. They have the abilities. They're paid according to their abilities. When you start getting to the bottom and you have people who don't have the skill sets, when you continue to bring those people into the country, the ones that actually deserve the chance, and I mean it sincerely, deserve the opportunity, are denied that opportunity because now they're competing with others. So when somebody tells you, well, they pay taxes, they deserve to be here, they've been here for 20 years, A, if they came here illegally, they don't deserve to be here. B, don't care if they pay taxes, they'll never pay as much as they take out of the system. And C, who gets hurt? Who gets hurt? Does one of ours get hurt? One of theirs get hurt? And it is us or them. It isn't racist. It isn't anti-this or anti-that. This is an issue of law and justice. The law says this, justice delayed is justice denied. And the people who need to benefit from it are the ones who are being played like fools by the Democrats and the left. Because if all of these immigrants made life better, then why aren't they back in their other countries making life better there? With that, I just want to wrap up and say I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you very much for listening in and participating. And, of course, I'd like to shout out to Blue Microphones. That's right. We are back using my Yeti, and these guys have got some of the greatest customer service I've ever seen on the planet. I had a Blue Microphone, a Blue Yeti that I've been using for years. It started to fail. It was just not holding its own. I packed it up, sent them an email, packed it up. They gave me an RMA number, and literally within a week of them having it, I had a brand new one back on my desk, and that is where this show is coming from, and I can see the difference in the unit. So, good luck with the new year. I will speak to you again next week. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Snarkette. Wish everybody a Merry Christmas, and those who have finished, a Happy Hanukkah. And I will speak to you one last time before the new year. But good luck, God bless, and I will catch you again. That much I promise. This is Warren Markowitz. Thank you very much for joining me on Politically Incorrect on the Warren Markowitz Show. Be good.
The Warren Markowitz Show on Red State Radio, Spreaker, and Podomatic.